The one, the only, the legendary, the golden-voiced Ken Korak. Good morning, Mr. Korak. How are you?
So here's the deal. As long as we don't tell Bob Melvin that I'm doing this interview.
Yes.
Because, like, his superstitions are off the charts. So don't replay what you just said.
No, we won't. And we may not even share the interview on social media, just in case Bob's trolling Twitter. Before we get started, when we visit you in Phoenix every year, and obviously we weren't able to this year, one of my favorite things, Ken, is to always talk to you about your passion for music. Ken Korak has a very eclectic musical taste. I have a friend that hosts the morning show on a country station in our building, and we're both old rock DJs. He handed me a CD. It is Supertramp's Breakfast in America, and I just was curious as to your thoughts on Supertramp.
Well, I actually, they weren't at the top of my list, to be honest with you. So if you're asking me some Supertramp trivia,
no.
I probably couldn't give you a whole lot of great information. I have great respect for what they accomplished, but they weren't part of my playlist, to be honest with you.
Let's stick to Fleetwood Mac, right?
Yeah, okay, great.
Were you a Doobie Brothers guy? I can't remember if we talked Doobies or not.
I was. Okay. Oh, yeah, for sure. And, in fact, they've come out and sung the national anthem a couple of times at the Coliseum. So, yeah, I mean, before they had Michael McDonald, they were great. And once Michael joined the band, obviously, they really took off. So
I was going to ask you.
In fact, we had this thing when I was in college. Whenever we got a new stereo system, any of the roommates, the first album we put on would be a Doobie Brothers album, because we always thought the recordings were just so great and so clean. So we wanted to test how the new stereo system sounded with like a Doobie Brothers LP.
Interesting that you know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of Doobie Brother fans that they're not big on Michael McDonald, and I agree with you. I feel like they listen, and we'll get to the A's here. I feel like I've had this conversation on the air before. The song "What a Fool Believes" to me is so underrated. It's so amazing, and the keyboards, his voice. A lot of people don't like Michael McDonald. I'm glad to hear you fall on the right side of the tracks there.
Oh yeah, I think he had this wonderfully soulful sound with them too. Kind of changed their sound a little bit, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they have Bay Area roots, too, so they have a great background of playing around the Bay Area for years.
Well, speaking of, boom, transition here, speaking of playing around the Bay Area, I feel like every year it seems like we have a conversation like this, Ken, that you know, what is it about that place with the weather, just go inside or something, come back out, and it'll be raining in 5 minutes. They're 0-6. They went 11 in a row after splitting a couple. And are we ever able to put our finger on how the heck this all happens?
I don't know. I mean, they went from awful to great, like, overnight. So, it's hard to explain it, except this is, and I don't ever want to feel like we get used to it or take it for granted, but this is kind of what they do.
Yeah.
You know, they won 9 in a row last year. They won 11 straight the year before that. So, they can be really streaky, and I think one thing about them that has characterized their clubs over the years, they have this deep belief in themselves. So, even when they lose 6 straight and then they were 1-7, they were 5.5 games out of first place at that point. They flipped like 8.5 or 9 games just on the Astros in the standings since then. So it's been pretty fun to watch for sure.
Ken Korak, the legendary voice of the Oakland A's, joining us. You know, Ken, over the years, the A's have had a habit of bringing in guys that may be on the downside of their career who come into Oakland and they have really good years. So two-part question for you. Number one, where in the Oakland Coliseum is the Fountain of Youth hidden? And two, how often does Jed Lowry drink from it?
Yeah.
Well, I think he has definitely borrowed from Ponce de Leon. There's no question. Thing about Jed is, and it may be frustrating for other clubs, is that he's been the healthiest with the A's and he's played the best with the A's in his career. Now, this is his third stint. And, of course, in New York, he only had 7 at-bats in 2 years, but he had his knee surgery, which was really critical for him. And even though he came to spring training on a minor league deal, as soon as he showed up and everybody saw how healthy he was, there was no doubt he was going to be the A's starting second baseman. And this goes back to early March. And that was shocking to people, but not so much to the A's people.
Yeah, turn on your mic, Dave.
I got to turn my mic on, or otherwise it won't work. Ken Korak joining us. He always has his mic on when necessary because he is a professional. He's the voice of the A's. You can hear him later today. Coverage starting at 4 o'clock. So we had a great question before you came on, Ken, because A's fans are always excited to hear from you. Wanted us to ask you this. It's obviously a small sample size. But Matt Olson looks like Conan the Barbarian out there right now. What do you see in comparison to his struggles of last year and the inverse for Chappie, who looks frustrated but seems to be swinging fine and very healthy?
Well, those are great questions, guys. I think with Matt, and he was really direct when he talked to the media during spring training when they asked him how he would look back and evaluate his season from last year, and he said, "I stunk." So he was able to at least objectively kind of look at himself, although he had 14 home runs a year ago, but he batted less than 200. He put in a tremendous amount of work on his swing and his setup, and he's much more balanced this year and more direct to the ball. And so oftentimes what happens in spring training doesn't portend anything in the regular season, but we kind of saw this during the spring, and it's come to fruition in the regular season. Now, as far as Matt is concerned, I think he's still maybe reworking some habits he got into last year when he tried to play through the injury and eventually succumbed to the hip injury and had surgery and missed the postseason. And he talked about that in one of the Zoom calls with the press a couple of weeks ago, that when you lose your legs, it's hard to swing. And so last year, to compensate, he started using his upper body and he got into some bad habits. So it may be that he's just trying to rework that. I have a feeling that he's going to catch fire here pretty soon.
Ken, another guy on this team, and we talk about, and what's so fun about the A's is they have all these guys that come in, whether it's young guys, whether it's veterans. But one of the unsung heroes, I feel like, of this early run for the A's has been Mitch Moreland. How important is it to have veteran guys like that in the clubhouse, but also that can come out in clutch situations and perform?
Very big, and he's hit a couple home runs recently, and has two of the three walk-offs, although the second one was ruled an E5 on Sunday against the Tigers. Could have been a base hit. So, yeah, he's been really instrumental. And plus, when Olson was hurt, he went in and played first base for two or three games, and he has a gold glove pedigree playing third, although he's going to DH almost all the time now. So, and I think it also goes to like a broader story, which is when the A's made the trade with the Rangers to get Elvis Andrus and when they sent Chris Davis over there. And Elvis has filled in, I think, well for Marcus Semien, although he hasn't hit much so far. That trade also gave the A's a lot of financial flexibility. It turned their offseason around completely. It came late in the offseason. And one of the effects of that was that they went out and signed Mitch Moreland.
Ken Korak joining us. You know, during this streak, too, you're so very good at putting your finger, as we said earlier, on the different things that are clicking. But I think we can also allow for, and going back to the start of this conversation, superstitions, things you can't explain in baseball, things that have no explanation. Different players, different scenarios, Kent, but I was thinking of Scott Hatterberg shortly after the last game against the Twins when Ramon Laureano hit that shot to third and the error happened and the run scored and the A's won. I couldn't help but think that I've seen so many times when the A's have gone on these streaks, it's not just the things you can put your finger on. It's the baseball gods. And I believe they're real. In games like the other night, that doesn't happen when you've lost six in a row or five in a row. That's not what happens. But on this winning streak, it just seems that all these crazy things fall into place.
There's an old thing where people say, when you're going good, you're going good. When you're going bad, you're going bad.
Yeah.
So when you're going well, stuff happens. And they really benefited from the two errors that the Twins committed in that bottom of the 10th inning. And speaking of Scott, there's a great story about Scott and the 20-game winning streak in The Athletic today that Alex Coffey wrote. So that's great reading. And, yeah, we also, you know, when the A's were trailing 12-11, I thought, you know, the final score of the 20th game was 12-11. So they kind of reversed that on Wednesday as well.
A's on an 11-game win streak. Obviously, that 2002 A's team had the 20-game win streak. So let's have a little fun. Let's say, I just want to throw this out there, guys. Let's say the A's win the World Series this year.
Okay.
I know, I'm going big. I'm going
that.
Big here.
Uh-huh.
don't we need a sequel to Moneyball with Brad Pitt? Like, Ken, would you be in for this? Like, isn't that like the best sequel ever with the happy ending?
Well, I'm in because I'm still getting residual checks from Sony Pictures for Moneyball. So, you know, I mean, if they want to make another movie, I'm all in. Well, here's the thing about Moneyball. Because one of the things was that don't run, right? Like, it was forbidden to steal bases. At least that was the perception back then with the A's. They lead the American League in steals. So that might have to be a little bit of a maybe a sidebar story to whatever movie they might make if they win the World Series.
The overachieving Oakland Athletics, again, they take on Baltimore today. We'll have all your coverage starting at 4 o'clock right here in your home of the A's. Ken, if I can, step off the field for a second. I know we talked last year, and I just wanted to address it again this year with the pandemic, with everything going on, things still a little bit upside down. How has it been for you and the broadcast team? Has anything changed from last year, loosened up at all? You know, how is it working for you guys and the challenges and still calling the game? It still sounds wonderful, but, you know, having to deal with some of the things you got to deal with.
Well, I appreciate the question. I mean, the team's in Baltimore, and I'm talking to you from my living room out here in the Tri-Valley. So I'll be driving to the Coliseum after I do the manager show this afternoon. So it hasn't changed really at all. We're still doing our interviews, you know, via Zoom. That's how I'll do the manager show today, and all the interviews with the players and staff are done the same way. So we're broadcasting from the Coliseum while the team's on the road off the TV monitors. I mean, they're trying to tighten it up. I think hopefully over the span of the last year, some of the technology has gotten better. But really, to answer your question, it hasn't changed a whole lot since last year.
Ken, from a broadcasting standpoint, obviously, and I think baseball more than any other sport is the one sport where people really love to travel from city to city because of the ballpark atmosphere. Since you haven't been able to travel with COVID, is there a particular city or ballpark that you really miss going to?
Well, it would be great to be at Camden Yards tonight because that's a jewel, and it was the first of the new ballparks. It really was seminal, I think, from that standpoint. So great place to do a game. And, you know, obviously I've always been – Seattle's always been my favorite town to visit for a lot of reasons in the American League, so I miss that. You know, after being on the road for all these years, I don't think I miss it. I just feel really badly for the young announcers.
Right.
For a lot of reasons. You know, the people who haven't had the chance to spend, I mean, this is my 30th year in the American League, so really haven't had the chance to get out and do the kinds of things and experience the cities like I have. I mean, spending days and nights in New York or Boston and some of the other towns, there are so many things you can do besides doing the games. And then I think for those people who are, and it's a challenge doing the games off of a monitor, and for young people who are just trying to make their mark in the business and knowing that you're being judged, I feel badly for them too. They have to do this, but we understand why. I think we all know in so many, you know, aspects of what we do with COVID that we've all had to adjust. And so this is just part of that.
Ken, if you were in Baltimore right now, are you a guy that tries to take advantage of the city's unique features? Have you already done the pit beef? Have you already done the Maryland blue crab? What would you be looking forward to the most eating or doing in Baltimore?
Well, there's some great seafood, of course, and you might have to think about some crab cakes, right? I mean, that might be at the top of the list, but, okay. You know, there's some wonderful art museums there. There's the National Aquarium is walking distance. It's only like a 3-minute walk from the team hotel. So that's a cool place to go, too. So just hanging out. The A's Hotel is right in the inner harbor there. So there's a whole, you know, wide range of things you could be doing. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool place to visit.
Just a quick follow-up on that. I don't know why, but I've never been to Baltimore, and I've always kind of been obsessed with the Baltimore pit beef sandwich. And I am just curious, have you tried one?
No, I haven't. Okay. I'm not even that aware of it, to be honest with you. So...
Well, I saw
it's obviously something I'm really, you know, I'm shortchanging myself, obviously.
Maybe. I don't know. I saw it on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and they said it was like a the Baltimore's version of the Chicago dog. Like it was one of their main meals. I don't know. It sounded good.
Yeah. Okay. So next time we go there, I'm going to check it out. Okay.
All right. We expect.
But there's also a cool little Italy, which is also right. The team hotel is almost right in the little Italy section there where I mean, you could just stumble into like 8 or 10 great restaurants without even trying down there.
Yeah, I would imagine there's some good eats there too. Cam, we always appreciate your time. It's always a blast to hear you on the station. You know how many A's fans are out here in the 916 and the 209, the 530. And once again, overachieving and over-delivering, and let's just hope that maybe they're not going to win every game the rest of the year, I'm sure, although knock on wood they can, but hopefully they continue to win many more than they lose.
Well, you guys know how I feel about you, so you guys have been great to us. So, and we'll see if they can keep it going tonight. So thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ken. Take care. He's the best. He is Ken Korak.